This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Our cities have been the centers of momentous change over the last 7 months. From the global pandemic to mass demonstrations over racial injustice, cities have been transformed. Public space is taking on a significant role in our society as a place to demand justice, while public space also raises serious concerns about public health. The Mercantile Library explores the role of public space in an upcoming talk, The Public City. We previewed this week's event in a conversation earlier this morning. We're joined now by Ken Greenberg, an urban designer, teacher, writer, former director of urban design and architecture for the City of Toronto, and principal of Greenberg Consultants. Ken, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We're glad to have you. And we also have with us via Zoom Dr. Vikas Mehta. He's a professor of urbanism at the College of Design, Architecture, Art, and Planning, or DAP, at the University of Cincinnati. Dr. Mehta, welcome to you as well.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Mehta, let's start with you. This is a presentation at the Mercantile Library, and it's called The Public City, but this is part of a series of conversations called The Case for Cities. Can you help us understand what's the case being made and why is there a need for it?
So as we've all seen in the last 7 or 8 months, there's been, because of the pandemic, a kind of anti-urban sentiment in the media where, you know, things like density have been blamed for exacerbating the pandemic. And we want to make sure that message is corrected. It's actually not the case. And we'll talk about that more during this series of conversations. We're going to have about 11 conversations that talk about the various aspects of cities and why cities are good for us and why cities, in fact, are one of the ways we can deal with issues of public health and social injustices, rather than the cities being blamed for the cause for the pandemic.
But we are seeing that the higher cases are happening in densely populated areas like the city of Cincinnati, are we not?
We are, but we are also understanding that the large part of the problem is really with behavior and with leadership and with the inequalities and inequities that exist in places. And that has not to do only with urban sort of agglomeration. These cases are places that are inequitable, where leadership is lacking, is happening in very, very small rural places as well, as you can see.
We are certainly seeing on maps that rural counties are seeing significant spikes in cases also. Before we get to Ken, though, Dr. Mehta, could you put that into perspective from a local perspective, I suppose? Hamilton County is on the verge of being the first in Ohio reaching the highest level of classification in the color-coded system used to describe the spread and severity of COVID-19. That would be purple status. That could come this week. Can you help us understand from your point of view why that might be happening in a place like this?
So again, I think there are, of course, many, many reasons for it. But if you know, Ohio and our county was actually doing very well for several months. But I think there is a little bit of fatigue in terms of people's ability to contain and be sort of isolated. But there is a larger issue. I think that as these places become red or purple over time, there is a larger general lack of leadership in the country, as we all know. And there is no clear mandate of how we should be approaching this. In the context of public spaces, that's something that we'll talk about. But that there is, again, no clear way to think about how we should be addressing these issues.
That's Dr. Vikas Mehta, professor of urbanism at UC DAP. We're also joined by Ken Greenberg, a principal at Greenberg Consultants and the former director of urban design and architecture for the City of Toronto. Ken, you are part of this presentation coming up on Wednesday at the Mercantile Library. And as Dr. Mehta said, you know, there's certain doomsaying about American cities, particularly during this pandemic and also during the uprisings related to social and racial injustice. Can you explain why in this descriptive of the event that cities are described as not the source of America's current predicaments, but rather the ultimate solution to a, quote, healthier, more sustainable, and more equitable America?
I want to go back to the question of whether cities are to be blamed or not. And there's a fundamental confusion which interestingly enough, Jane Jacobs wrote about in her well-known book, Death and Life of Great American Cities in 1961. And the distinction is between density and overcrowding. Density, in a kind of knee-jerk reaction, and this came up once again recently, going back to March, is not the problem. The problem is overcrowding. And overcrowding can occur at very low densities. It can occur in rural areas. It can occur in our country, in the far north, in indigenous settlements. And it's where you have many people living in a small household. It's where you have people working in factories close to each other without protection. It's where you have people having to get on crowded buses. The whole notion that dense cities are a problem is really a kind of red herring. And I think we've come to understand that. But on the positive side, cities have an extraordinary ability to adapt, to form social networks, to organize themselves, to respond to crises. We've seen that throughout history. And I think we're witnessing that again in this time of pandemic, that from a public health standpoint, having access to the ability to pivot, to use outdoor spaces in innovative ways, to call attention to people who are underhoused, vulnerable populations, and to take measures quite quickly to try and cope with that. That's what cities do. And I'll just add one more thing, and I think you have to know that Canadians are looking across the border in kind of amazement to see that the response to the pandemic has been politicized in the U.S. To the extent that wearing a mask becomes somehow an indication of one's party affiliation. We've had extraordinary collaboration across governments, provincial, federal, municipal, of all parties, simply recognizing that this is a public health crisis and it needs all hands on deck. So this comes to the point that Vikas was making about leadership and collaboration.
Ken, you just said that Canadians are looking across the border in amazement at the politicization of the pandemic, particularly as it relates to masks. My goodness, you can read any comment thread on social media and see plenty of suggestions from Americans that this pandemic disappears as soon as the election is over, in spite of all the evidence that this is very obviously and very clearly a worldwide pandemic. If you're in Toronto, Ken, can you just give us a general idea? And I know this isn't necessarily related to the chat on Wednesday, but out of curiosity, what is life like right now in Toronto compared to what we're experiencing, say, in Cincinnati?
Well, I'm not in Cincinnati, so it's hard to know. I'm just going by what I see in the news. But, it's amazing to me that all the reporting in the U.S. barely mentions what's going on in other countries and the fact that the U.S. perhaps has among the worst performances in the world with extraordinary resources and much acclaimed health system, and yet accounting for almost a quarter of the deaths in the entire world. So, if I look at Canada, the numbers across the country are just so much lower. They're a fraction of what you're seeing in the U.S. So at this time, we are across Canada, and that's true in Toronto as well. We are into a second wave. There's no question about that. Our provincial government, municipal government, governments, regional governments are doing a targeted and relative shutdown of various indoor facilities in trying to flatten the curve again, as we did back in March and April. Life goes on, but I think, people are not eating indoors in restaurants. Things like gyms and indoor activities are shut down. Kids are going to school. That seems to be working, although a lot of kids have taken the option of online learning. That is an option that the children and their families have. Everybody is feeling a bit stir crazy, like everywhere else. But I think the most important thing is the sense that from the mayor to the local politicians to our provincial premier, and we're talking about people in different parts of the political spectrum are by and large seeing this as a situation where we truly are all in this together.
We're talking with Ken Greenberg, principal at Greenberg Consultants. He's based in Toronto, where he was previously director of urban design and architecture there. He's an urban designer, teacher, and writer. We're also joined on Zoom by Dr. Vikas Mehta, professor of urbanism at the College of Design, Architecture, Art, and Planning, or DAP, at the University of Cincinnati. And Dr. Mehta, you know, I recall growing up in the 90s and all of us were moving to the suburbs. And now as an adult, I'm living in the city and I find so many people coming to the city, a lot of my former neighbors in the suburbs coming into the city to enjoy what maybe in a previous lifetime was a downtrodden, scary place to be, depending on the part of town. And now it's just full of life and vibrance. And I'm wondering if there is concern from people like you who study these things about what happens on the other side of this pandemic when this thing clears up. And when things quiet down a little bit, whether people's minds will retain any animosity towards urban areas, or if you would expect people to return the way that they had been?
So I think, as we all know, that in the last two decades, especially North American cities have really turned around, and the opportunity of urban areas has been found. In many cases, the way I think about it is what I call and tell my students that capital has found public space. If we just stay on the idea of public space, that now there is a clear recognition that public space can be used as a commodity to bring a certain value visible to people to be able to return. Of course, there are several other policies that contribute to people returning to cities. But in the context of public space, that has been one of the key reasons. And we see in Cincinnati, we have a wonderful network of public spaces that are places of, you know, that are used for civic action, for obviously for social interaction, as restorative recreational spaces. I think if we play this correctly in the context of all of these amenities that cities offer us, that if we make sure that these places are also symbolic places, that they belong to the very, very different kinds of communities that cities have attracted, I think that's where cities will be recognized as places that in fact can deal with and are perfectly structured to deal with things like the sort of the issues that come with public health and with public injustices. So the relationship between public health, public space, and the public injustices and the role that public space plays in it is actually very evident, at least to us. So it's the manner that we can use these things to make sure that these places are not just promoted as attractive places for, you know, the tourist or the downtown worker, but also for the communities.
And Ken, as we've seen this year, we've been grappling with more than a worldwide health pandemic here in America. Certainly, we've seen social and political uprisings taken to the streets, and sometimes they are related to the pandemic, but mostly we've seen them related to racial injustice in this country. What have we learned about the role of public spaces as we experience them through these demonstrations?
Well, I think around the world, attention has been called to systemic racism and to vulnerabilities of certain populations, and I think rightly so. I think in our situation, and this existed before the pandemic and has been heightened by it, the Toronto City region is the fastest growing in North America. We have two interesting characteristics. One, over 50% of the population was born in another country, and over 50% identify as visible minorities. So, in fact, we have no majority population, if you want to put it that way. We have been relatively successful at living together, albeit this is a continuous work in progress. At making that work. And the role of public space in that equation just cannot be overestimated. We need those places the streets, the squares, the parks, the schoolyards, the libraries, the community centers, both indoor and outdoor public spaces, where people get to know each other face to face, not through the windshields of cars, not online, but actually in real life. And so what we've seen with the pandemic is a level of people out walking in their neighborhoods, by the way, in the city center and in the suburbs, that we've never seen before, a use of parks as shared civic living rooms we have never seen before, and a premium on public space that it has been revealed. And even as we get into the colder weather, because we're in Canada after all, this is likely to continue through the winter. And I'm quite convinced that having experienced that, it will not go back. A lot of the, you know, in all our cities, we've been taking back lanes from traffic and turning them over to cycling and walking and outdoor eating. This will now become a permanent feature. We're going to be much more involved in creating more park spaces and linked park spaces than we were before for the same reason.
In our final minute together, Dr. Mehta, I'm wondering, what type of impact do you think a year like this, with everything that's happened, will that have on teaching urban planning and design and architecture and that sort of thing as it relates to urban areas?
So that's an excellent question. I teach typically a class on public space in the fall, because that's when students can actually go out and experience public spaces, talk to people. We had to cancel that class because it seemed like without the actual experience of being out there, this would be kind of pointless. I think the part that I'm finding very interesting, and this is again relevant to teaching as well, is the transfer of agency in this time of the pandemic. A lot of the regulations that were on public spaces have been sort of taken back. Either those spaces have been locked, closed. And in doing so, people have found, what can they do with their neighborhood spaces? What can they do with streets? And how can they adapt, especially when they don't have other places for recreation to go to? They have actually changed the nature of public space in the way you can see people using public space. And I think that's very valuable in the context of teaching as well, is to see how, when everything is not programmed, how do people in fact claim agency? Because that's they're one of the ways to be able to get out, to socialize, to talk about civic issues, to protest, and to basically make their voices heard. So I think that's an interesting component for me from the perspective of teaching as well.
The Public City is Wednesday evening at 7:30, hosted by the Mercantile Library. We've got details at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. My thanks to Dr. Vikas Mehta and Ken Greenberg for joining us. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Muggs.